Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patty LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Bryce, I do need some advice. Mm-hmm. Not for me, of course. It's for a friend. It's a friend. He's white. And the other night he was thinking about the possibility of having a daughter. Mm. And what if he named that daughter Erzuli? Maybe just a middle name. Mm. But would that be
offensive?
Cultural appropriation. Mm-hmm. Or is naming your child after a musical actually the most white thing you could do, so it doesn't really matter?
I think there's a fine line. I feel like that's somewhere in the middle. It just depends on how you approach it. For me, it's all about intentions.
Fair enough.
You know what I mean?
Fair enough.
And
absolutely.
The intention behind that would be like, aw. I mean, personally, I'm not planning to have kids.
Oh, yeah.
But like, now, I have a cat allergy. However, I love cats. So at some point, I'm going to just make it happen.
What if you had a cat named Papagay?
But do you see what I'm saying? Like, that would be cute. Like,
that
could. I'm going to have, you know, cat names probably of, you know, characters that mean a lot to me.
This is smart.
I'm a nerd across the board. So not just musicals, but also literature as well. Like, I love, you know, sci-fi, fantasy. And so, I have so many options of, like, nerdy names to give my pets.
It's just what alley you decide to go down.
Yeah, I definitely am. All four.
You're going to need a lot of animals.
I probably will have them. And then I'll have so many allergy meds to take.
You have a reptile named Elfie. Or maybe the reptile should be Glinda. Let's be honest.
Okay. Yeah. Mix it up.
Let's turn it around. Actually, if anybody out there has a pet that's named after a musical theater character, I want to see that. Send it to us, add us, because now I'm really fascinated.
Yeah.
And if you are named after a musical theater character, like, God bless those parents. I want to see a picture of those parents. Welcome, everybody, to a musical theater podcast where we discuss the cultural and emotional impact of some of our favorite musicals in theater history. My name is Jeffrey Scott Parsons. You can call me Jeff. This week, we're talking Once on This Island with Bryce Charles.
Hello.
Everybody say hi, Bryce. So grateful you're here.
So happy to be here.
This episode will be coming out the last of Black History Month, but I wanted to be sure to have some representation this month.
Yes, amazing.
For many reasons. I feel like Black artists have given me so much in my life as a white farm boy. Like truly, in many ways, I feel like Black artists taught me how to feel. Mm. So I'm super grateful to be talking about this show that is so much about heart and feeling and love, and I'm grateful you're here to do it. Mm. When did you first get to know Once on This Island?
I have been aware of LaShawn's, and so for a while.
Kwan LaShawn's.
And, you know, so, like, how can you not know her and her voice?
People often talk about performers who light up the screen, you know? And LaShawn's, that smile lights up a theater.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
Forget about the screen. Oh. All she does is flash those teeth, man, and you feel it in the back row of the theater.
And then she just has this voice that just, I mean, she would open her mouth, just drop her jaw, and just this wall of sound. You know what I mean? I was just, like, mesmerized that people could just, like, do that. And so because of that, I think I kind of had some sort of knowledge of Once on This Island, maybe in high school, but hadn't really, like, you know, done the full proper dive into it. And then in college, they did the show, and I had auditioned, and I was essentially an onstage swing. Basically, I covered a soca, which, if anyone knows me vocally, that is not my, it's vocally not my jam.
It's just not where you live.
It's not where my voice lives, Lord have mercy. But I never had to go on. It was mainly for like rehearsal purposes, but I covered a soca, covered Erzuli, which felt a little.
Yeah, that's your game, right?
Yeah, I was like, this, all right, I can live here. And then I also kind of covered Timun a bit as well, like in the rehearsal process. And then I was in the ensemble, a part of the village, and that was. I have fond memories of the show. Just such fond memories being in it. I would love to do it again.
There's such a community to the show that I feel like it could be a really beautiful bonding experience to mm-hmm. be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
One of the main parts of the story of how Once on This Island came about is Rosa Guy.
Mm-hmm.
And she is one of the personalities or one of the people that I wanted to focus on,
mm-hmm.
particularly as we're celebrating Black History Month. She was a writer who wrote a novel called My Love, or The Peasant Girl, and that's mm. what Once on This Island was based on.
Right.
She was born in Trinidad, mm. and, like, immigrated to New York very, very young with her family, and then was quickly orphaned.
Mm.
As a young woman, like, she was 19, she joined the American Negro Theater. And then, as she became a writer, she was one of the founders of the Harlem Writers Guild,
oh.
which their whole purpose was to support Black writers mm-hmm. and getting them published. And Maya Angelou was on the board, Ruby Dee, like all of these legendary people were a part of this organization that was actually proved to be very effective. As her career continued, she started writing more for youth,
mm-hmm.
which I think is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where My Love came from, which is a Caribbean spin on Hans Christian Andersen's The Little Mermaid.
Yes.
And so she wrote this novel, and then it was picked up by the musical theater writing team, Stephen Flaherty and Lynn Ahrens.
Mm-hmm.
I believe we are both big fans of this
yes.
composing team.
Yes, what a duo.
they're some of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty met at the BMI workshop, like musical theater workshop,
okay.
which pretty much every musical theater writing team that became popular after 1980, they met there.
Okay, got it.
And so they met. They started writing together. Lynn Ahrens, I didn't realize, started as a composer and lyricist.
Mm.
She worked on Schoolhouse Rock.
Oh.
So if you know The Preamble
yeah.
or Inner Planet Janet, like any of those
no
songs,
kidding.
She did those for Schoolhouse Rock.
Wow, so I grew up with them even further back in my childhood than I realized.
And then she gets together with Stephen Flaherty, who was a composer, and she became lyricist. And they started writing shows, some of which came to fruition, some didn't. But Once on This Island was their first musical that hit Broadway.
Mm.
It started out at Playwright Horizons. It's amazing how important these different organizations are that give opportunities for young, you know, unknown artists
uh-huh.
to be seen and heard.
Mm-hmm.
Playwright Horizons is one of them. It's produced there and then quickly moves to Broadway. And it opened on Broadway in 1990, ran for about a year. And
that's it?
Uh-huh.
Really? Wow, that feels really short.
We'll talk about the season that surrounded it.
Mm.
It was a big season, and
okay.
it kind of got swallowed up by everybody.
Mm.
But it's had staying power.
Yes,
and
definitely.
I also think that it was really well-beloved,
mm-hmm.
even if the ticket sales may not have shown that as enthusiastically.
Mm-hmm.
It was directed by Graciela Daniel
mm.
and choreographed by her as well.
Oh, okay.
She's another person who I think a lot of people don't know about, even in the musical theater world.
I honestly didn't.
She later choreographed Ragtime. She is an incredibly creative woman.
Mm,
and,
clearly.
Yeah. And everybody who works with her has said what a generous and creative person she is, taking time in rehearsals to just figure out how your character moves and why they would do one gesture or the other.
Mm.
And that kind of generosity just creates these really magical experiences for everyone involved.
Mm-hmm.
She may be kind of an unsung hero, I think, in modern musical theater.
Definitely.
Anyway, so that's kind of how the musical came to fruition.
Mm.
But the real heart of it is the story itself. Hey, listeners, you want to hear something really cool? The theater department from my old high school reached out to me and asked if they could sponsor an episode of the podcast. It's kind of the sweetest thing ever, especially since when I was in high school, I spent most of the time in the choral department. But under the direction of my pals Melanie Day and Jenna Barber, the Box Elder High School Theater Department has grown into one of the biggest assets of the school and the region as well. I've worked with the kids before, and oh my heck, they're great. A little Utah humor for you. They're willing to work hard and fully invest, and I'm so very happy to spend a little time this episode giving them some love. If you want to check out what they're up to, visit their Instagram at BEHS Theater. That's BEHS Theater with an R-E. Duh, is there any other way to spell it? And I also want to take a moment to talk to the students specifically. Listen up, guys. Many moons ago, I was where you are right now. And honestly, I couldn't wait to get out. High school is weird that way. But I know that this theater department cares about you. So I strongly encourage you to let that love in and then take that with you no matter where you end up. Because that's the beautiful thing about theater. We're connected for a moment and then somehow forever. What I love about this show, the approach that they took with this show, mm-hmm. is that it gets like right back to the basics of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
It starts traditionally with the storm and a young child crying because they're afraid,
mm-hmm.
and the community comes together and begins to tell the child a story.
Mm, so sweet. It's so endearing, and it pulls you right in.
Right?
Yeah.
And Lynn Ahrens, who also wrote the script, the book, along with the lyrics, did such a musical job of creating this dialogue that, like, even now as I'm thinking of how to tell the story, I just want to go straight to the dialogue.
Uh-huh.
There is an island.
Yeah.
Where rivers run deep. Like, it's mm-hmm. it's so poetic and beautiful, and I don't know how much of it comes actually from Rosa Guy's source material.
Oh, right.
But it's so evocative and paints such a beautiful picture.
Mm-hmm, it does.
We get to know this island that is in the Antilles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called the Jewel of the Antilles, right? And on this island are two groups of people. You have the peasants,
mm-hmm.
whose skin is very dark.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the Bosoms,
mm-hmm.
who are kind of like a mixed,
yeah, the mixed
European mm-hmm. race. And they don't get along because one is very rich and uppity and has very European ways, and the other does not.
Mm-hmm.
And the peasants pray to the gods.
There's Asaka.
So we got Asaka, who is
Mother
of Earth. Right?
There's Agwe.
Oh, Agwe, right, God of Water.
Papage, who we know is our
sly
villain.
Demon of death.
And then Erzuli.
And Erzuli, who's
Goddess of Love.
Goddess of Love, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And we see kind of the humility of this peasant population.
Mm-hmm.
And from that begins the opening number.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ahrens and Flaherty, in my opinion, write the best opening numbers in musical theater. Every one of their shows has an amazing opening number.
Yeah, and this one in particular always gives me chills when I listen to it. The music, for one, makes me so happy. The rhythm of it, the way that they wrote it, it just feels like a celebration. It feels like
joyous.
It feels like joy. It feels like community. There's something so magical about the music throughout this show. On my way here, I was listening to it just to, you know, get in the vibe,
get in the vibe
and everything. And I kind of sat back and was like, God, I love this show.
Mm-hmm.
I love the music. And you're right, with the storytelling, the book is so musical in itself. And I always thought of it all as one
thing.
Yeah, it might as well, you know, it might as well be an opera in that sense. You know what I mean? It just, everything moves with music. Everything comes from music. And that is so cultural as well.
Mm.
They love each other. They love the earth around them. And they praise these beings for giving them, you know, the ability to be on that earth and with each other. And that is the heartbeat throughout the show. And even when it's slowed down for the ballads, you still can feel that, like, spiritual connection to the music.
And intention. Mm-hmm. You know from the get-go that everybody is a part of this for the right reason.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think being wealthy disrupts that so traditionally?
Because it's a distraction. The people who essentially have nothing comparatively to, you know, these wealthy people on the other side of the island, they have no choice but to look around and appreciate the little things. The air in their lungs in that moment is something that they do not take for granted. And they will thank the gods for that, you know? And money and wealth, that becomes a person's new
god,
deity.
Yeah.
It becomes that new focus.
Isn't it interesting that we've kind of created this racket where we want to create an easy life for our children or for those we love? But what this show teaches us is that in reality, the greatest thing that we can give our kids are our stories and our love.
Love, care, attention, compassion.
Community. And
a sense of community.
Okay, so so they do the opening number. We meet everybody. And then there's a couple in the village. And in the story, after a storm, they find a little girl in a tree, a little orphaned girl. And nobody knows who she is or how she got there. And they decide to take her in. They decide to adopt her, which when I think of the writer, Rosa Guy. And I love those lines that say, we have nothing and yet our lives are more full than ever. I love in the show that the gods, they're very temperamental is how the villagers talk about them. There's kind of a sense of humor that they have. Let's see what
they're meddlesome.
Yeah, let's see what we can do now.
Yeah, you know.
And I think that that can be found in
earlier forms of religion
and, everywhere.
Of religion, even, tradition, culture.
Even Old Testament, right? he tends to be kind of a jealous, angry god. And we see how the gods kind of organize opportunities to make choices. But when we use those opportunities to be better, to do better, the gods respond. And in a way, their evolution continues as well. Okay, so they name her Timun, which it means a little orphan, I believe, right?
That's her nickname. She has a
She has her like proper name is Desiree, right? Desiree French something.
Yeah, I was gonna say Desiree something or other.
But then they're like,
and then Timun.
We'll just call you Timun.
Yeah, you still, no matter what, you still a little orphan girl we found in the tree, and we love you.
Yes, so. Exactly. And then Timun grows into LaShans. And although I got to, we got to do a shout out to Haley Kilgore.
I will say, and then eventually grows into Haley Kilgore.
Because that girl can sing.
She can.
Then Timun sings Waiting for Life. Now, this song has some really interesting memories for me because in college we had group vocal class, which is torture. I mean, it's just legalized torture. It was a voice lesson, but as a class. And so you would sit and watch people be torn to bits. They'd pick one song for everybody to work on, one song for all the girls to work on, one song for all the guys to work on.
Yeah, that sounds familiar for me, too.
And they picked Waiting for Life for the girls to learn how
cruel.
To belt.
Oh, my gosh. Because initially at school, I auditioned for Timun.
Oh, cool.
So initially they asked us to sing it in the original key, which all of us, even the girls who could do it, were like, phew, okay, here we go.
I'm pitting out.
But that key change is, that's a tricky, that's a tricky spot because you're holding that out. And on that vowel too, like my goodness, it's not as simple as it may seem. And then I'm sure people are going to be listening to this like,
check out my YouTube video, girl.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And I'm like, good for you. That is great. But that is not everyone's testimony. It's not mine. And I can't, like, to imagine doing Timun 8 times a week. Wow.
Well, and I got to be honest, like, I'm going to call out my white brothers and sisters and say that this is probably something that a lot of us take for granted, that we just assume that all black girls can sing this song.
Can just, wail. And I'm not
so
a wailer at
I'm
all.
I'm grateful for you being like...
representation.
Let's be real here.
I'm representing...
The
black people.
The black
engineers. Like, who are like Queen Audra. Truly, truly, Audra's very existence for me is also another reason why I've been able to grow up with so much hope, because I've known who Audra McDonald was for a very long time. You know, she did pave the way for like the black ingenue and like mainstream musical theater, which I mean is a huge feat. It's incredible. It's inspiring. I mean, in some ways I feel like I kind of model my musical theater career, what I want my musical theater career to be after her, even. Because, like, I can get my way through the song now, But again, it's not the right colors for like what people, one, are expecting, mm-hmm. knowing the show.
Right.
And two, what they might want from that style.
Based on people's expectations.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like in a cabaret setting, I would love to just like try it and just have fun with it and do it my way, because that would be me expressing like my journey with my voice and my career, that kind of thing. But I know, those are just things that you just know. I know that like going into a room. Like especially back when they were like auditioning like for the tour and stuff, I was like, I'm probably not going to be able to get in there. Mm. But Andrea.
Oh, right.
Now, Andrea is my track. Mm. Andrea is my track.
That's we'll meet her pretty soon.
We will.
And actually, I really like what they did with her in the revival.
Love, 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 love.
Yeah.
Everything about it.
Okay. Did you see the revival?
Twice. So I saw it earlier. I saw it with the full original cast, which, I mean, what a blessing that was. And then I saw it once. I saw it after Lea Salonga left. And Haley had just, I think, like, done something to her ankle or something like that.
Oh, no.
And so she was out for a couple weeks. So I saw her understudy. But for me, I like seeing alternative versions of things like that, to see how they play and how people respond to them.
Yeah.
Because when I tell you, like, it took nothing away from, you know what I mean?
That's so important to hear.
That is. And that was important for me because, and I honestly wish I could remember her name. I feel so bad that I can't. But I thought she was stunning, and I really appreciated seeing that.
After Waiting for Life, which we were talking about the song, we didn't even say what the song's about. It's such a great I Want song, right?
It is.
She's saying, gods, you put me in a tree.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where I came from, but can I have a say in where I'm going?
And if we're going to talk about, you know, the parallels between this and Little Mermaid, and, you know, because the root of the stories are the same and it was based off of that story. So this and part of your world, you know what I mean? Like,
for sure.
But Waiting for Life, for me, what I love about it is it feels a little more active.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because she's actually talking back to the gods, and she's actually like demanding, you know, for something to happen, anything. Like, give me something. You wash mm-hmm. me up on this island, and, you know, you put me in these circumstances. But I am, you know, she's like bursting for life, for anything. She's so exuberant in that way.
And isn't it cool that she also isn't expecting the gods to do the work for her.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I'm ready to do the work.
Just let me live.
Just show me what I will. Uh-huh. I should do, and I will do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And once again, they respond.
And the gods heard her prayer.
Yes! Yes, they did.
Yes, they did. And this always made me giggle, because this is when they're... This is with the whole mango situation.
Right.
And this...
Where is it Asaka who's like, she's crazy.
Yeah, and what I also like about this little... sort of interlude as well, is it shows all of the gods' individual personalities.
All the personalities, the council.
Exactly. And it shows, you know, each of them, they take the mango and they say, like, Papage is like a poison mango, and Urzuli is a lovely mango. And then, you know, they drop the mango and knock some sense in her head. And then all of a sudden, it's like, but wait.
But what if we give her what she wants?
Yeah, let's shake it up a little bit. Let's actually, like, see what happens if... You know, she asks for this thing and we give it to her. What will she make the most of it?
Mm-hmm. It is interesting in a Little Mermaid sort of way, because Waiting for Life comes out of the fact that she sees a stranger in white in a car.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And who...
Sorry, I just heard her singing it. And just heard Sean singing it in my head. And I like my it took my breath away. Sorry.
Oh, I love that so
I legitimately
much.
Just.
So it comes out of that. But it isn't like, I'm so poor and I want to go live in a rich house.
Right, no.
There's something calling her to this. In the way that Ariel...
She's hungry for something. She's yearning for more.
In the way that Ariel's like, it's not that I hate being a fish or that I hate my family. I just feel like there's something up there out of this water that I got to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order for this to happen, in order for her to cross over from her villager life into... this stranger in white in a car, something's got to happen, and that's when the gods intervene.
Mm-hmm.
And they do so by, first of all, Ogwe.
What a great song. And this transition from And the Gods Heard Her Prayer into Rain is just... it's so good.
Now, that's a voice, too. I love Ogwe's, because that's another color that we don't always get to see in these types of musicals.
Mm-hmm.
Just a big, baritone-y, gorgeous voice.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So Ogwe makes it rain, but, like, rain.
Yeah. full on star.
To make sure,
can we jump to the revival, or do you want to save that?
No,
for later?
No, please go.
Okay, so I mean, I was shook to my actual core because I went into the show with the purest mind. Like revivals are such a weird thing for me because, especially with a show that I really love and have such a like strong, passionate connection to. Because I was like, you know, I know that they changed the orchestration and everything was so, it was in the round and it was immersive. And for me, I was like, this is so ambitious. Like, how is this going to change the heart of the show? And it just enhanced everything I already loved about the musical. Mm. And in the first moment when I sat down, I was like before the show even started, because the show actually has already begun. Let me correct myself.
Oh, really?
When you sit down, they're already sort of like just in the space and living in the space. And I sat down and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna love this. And then immediately everything washed away and I was just there with an open mind. And by the time we got to rain, I mean, it's raining. They have water
Michael Arden.
It's like
so good.
It's incredible. It's incredible because it really does hit all of your senses. I mean, even on the side in the beginning, before Alex Newell transitions into being Asaka, you know what I mean? Because because they're all a part of Lea Salonga's the doctor, and you know,
they were all part of the community before assuming parts of the story.
Exactly. And to see them transition into and just sort of like morph into the gods, it's so amazing to see. But on the side before that happens, Alex Newell's just cooking.
Oh, how cute.
Just cooking food, and you can like smell like the spices and things like that. And then there's also like live animals and sand. And then when the water comes down,
I'm sorry, there were live animals?
There's a goat, there's a chicken. I cannot. There were so many things that
I love animals so much.
So you're smelling food and you're smelling animals, and you see the sand. They're all, you know, they're barefoot, and so they're just so a part of the space. Mm. And then when the rain comes down at the various, you know, like storm moments of the show, you sort of can kind of feel that depending on where you're sitting.
The coolness of the water.
It is fascinating just how sensory the show became and how fully immersed everyone becomes. Like, I felt like I was part of the village. And because of the change in the orchestration, because it became more minimal and because a lot of things were divvied up amongst the voices, mm-hmm. I mean, you just kind of, you feel the music a little bit more. It doesn't feel like a distant thing or like some separate
proscenium type experience.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just, it's all around you, and you really feel like you're in this village, and they're just sort of playing music, and you're just vibing with them. I mean, I remember sitting in my seat, and I went both times with my mom, and we were just dancing.
That's so beautiful.
It was so amazing. And so, yeah, rain for me, I was excited about that because vocally, like just hearing that kind of booming sound. Also, there's a full spectrum of vocal quality and like style throughout the show, I feel, mm-hmm. because Ogwe, when singing Rain, it feels very classical.
Yeah.
And that's exciting. That was exciting for me to see that they kept that vibe. It didn't feel like
some sort of American Idol type.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, you just never know because.
Yeah, you never do.
Broadway can be a sing-off sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I was just so just enamored with the vocal choices throughout the show, even with Tonton Julian and Mama Yearly, you know, when they're
the parents of
the parents, yes, Timon's parents, they had a very classical approach to the music in a sense, but then they were just up there telling the story. Mm. They were up there telling the story, and vocally what came out enhanced that. It lended itself to telling the story.
Ogwe makes it rain. So then what's the guy's name?
Daniel.
Daniel comes driving in his white car, mm-hmm. obviously bad conditions with the weather, mm-hmm. and he drives off the road and has an accident.
Yes.
A bad accident that is about to take his life. Mm-hmm. And Timon witnesses it all because, once again, all of these things have been put into motion by the deities. So she rescues him, mm-hmm. and decides that this must be her mission, is to nurse him back to health. She was the one there to witness it and to rescue him. And now, in a way, the fulfillment of her dream, her wish.
Well, yeah, she's just prayed to the gods and, you know, and sort of demanded, like, something happen. Mm-hmm. And then something does happen. And it's, you know, not
and
just...
And it happens to be him.
Yes. And it's not just some little thing. She doesn't just happen to pass by him. Like, he's in critical condition. She's mm-hmm. like, oh, okay. His life is in my hands now.
Now, the villagers don't respond well to her plan.
Right.
Because
Daniel is a bosom.
Daniel is a bosom. And I guess maybe now we should talk about the tale of the Bosoms, which is kind of the little history lesson mm-hmm. that we get in the middle of the show mm-hmm. about the wealthy side of the island. Mm-hmm. As it turns out, there's this guy named Armand, right?
Armand.
And, oh, the original Armand was Jerry McIntyre. Do you know who Jerry McIntyre is? Jerry Mack?
I know that name.
He's an amazing director, choreographer, performer. He was in the original cast. And he's currently directing and choreographing a production of Once on This Island back in Utah.
Oh, cool.
And I worked with him on a project out here in L.A. a couple of years ago. And so I reached out to him to see if he would share some of his anecdotes or memories of being in the show. Mm-hmm. And he sent me a voice message. And so I'm going to play that now. So enjoy Jerry Mack.
Jerry McIntyre here, the original Armand. Well, not really the original, because I auditioned for the workshop of this before it went to Playwrights Horizons. God, I don't even know what year that was, but I auditioned for it and I was cast as Papa Gay. But I got this huge gig. I got this huge part in this new Broadway musical that was like destined to run forever called Annie 2. And I was cast as Punjab. So I had to turn Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty and Graziella Danielle down and said, no, no, I can't do this workshop of this new show that I never heard of. Of course, no one had never heard of it. So I said, no, I'm going to go and be a huge Broadway star. And then it crashed and burned. And I came back to the city and the guy who played Armand in the workshop dropped out. So they called me and said, do you want to play Armand? And I said, yes, I'd love to. And they said, well, great. Come in tomorrow and audition. Yikes. So that happened. And I got it. And then I did it at Playwrights Horizons. I played Armand and I did it on Broadway. And I was the dance captain. And Graziella Danielle, the director, where I was sending me, oh, you know what? You should do this. You should direct and choreograph. You're like, it's a natural for you. And I was like, oh my God, I don't want to do this at all. I just want to sing, dance, and act. I thought that's all you really need to do. And then it opened a door for me that changed my life, changed my career. And Once on This Island, you know, with LaChance, who I did my first Broadway show with, who was amazing. And, you know, Jerry Dixon and Keisha, like we've all been being on stage with 10 people. And every night having prayer circle at 5, it is really a show that the community loved. Like all the actors, like would come, and I actually staged the 20-year anniversary of it at the Martin Beck, and it was just so amazing and joyous to see what we had done. I mean, people were crying and we walked out the stage door and people had the program from when it was at Playwrights Horizon. They said, this is the show that my wife and I met on. We, you know, sang Human Heart at the wedding. It's like, it's a life-changing experience for me, Once on This Island.
Isn't that so sweet?
That is so sweet. Lovely he sent that.
Thank you, Jerry Mack. So he was the original Armand. Mm-hmm. And Armand is this European dude, right? Mm-hmm. And he, based on the orders of Napoleon, comes to this island and, you know, claims it for Europe and has a beautiful white wife, but likes to make love to the ladies.
We've heard this story in many variations.
We have many variations of this in our own history.
Even in my family.
Oh, really?
I'm Louisiana Creole, like French Creole.
Oh, yeah.
On my mom's side. And aesthetically, like, it's very apparent. Like, they're very fair, and a lot of them have, like, blue eyes and, like, whoa. Yeah, and, like, lighter hair even, too, blonde hair. And, it's fascinating. And my mom is, like, you can see it more so in my mom than, like, me. But even still, like, in high school, people would be like, are you mixed at all? And I would be confused. I was like, I don't think so. I'm pretty.
Yeah.
Like, what is an indication? But I realized it was because, like, with that culture comes, like, you know, relaxing your hair and things like that. Mm. And so most of the women my mom's side, on like the Creole side, relax their hair. And so I grew up with like relaxing my hair as well and keeping up with it too. I was just kind of like, eventually I got over it. And so I think when I was like a sophomore in high school, I was like, I'm going to grow out my natural hair and just do that, 'cause that feels more me. But for the longest time, I was like, why would people think I'm mixed? 'Cause to me, I was like, I just look black. and then it was because I would get my hair relaxed and they, some people didn't know that it was like relaxer. They were like, is that just natural? No, no, it's not. But that was just a part of like Creole
beauty
background.
Standards.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And then when did you find out like where your ancestry?
Our family name is Rouzon.
Oh, wow. You basically are a Bosom. I hate to break it
to
you.
That's why it was always something really interesting, like this part of the musical, because I was like, You know, like it was something that I could kind of relate to, because I remember being in high school and, you know, we would have like family picnics and family reunions and things like that. And we had T-shirts. We have T-shirts every year. And one year we had the shirt of Jean-Jacques Rouzon, who was French patriarchy of our family.
Wow.
So that was always something interesting. I was like, what's the story behind Jean-Jacques Rouzon? Like, who is this dude? And then they were like, well, he came over. And I don't know if – I really don't know if it's a love story or if it was just, you know, the typical goings-on.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was – he came over and the deed was done.
The deed was done and the babies were had.
Yeah, the family line was thus formed.
So Armand has a son with one of the peasant women, and the son's name is Bosom, which means the beautiful one.
Mm.
Bosom grows up and rebels against his father, and there's this huge war that happens. Armand, the father, gets kicked out, but before he leaves a curse on his son, and the curse is basically that you will always loathe yourself because you will be trapped on this island because you're black. But the whiteness that's added to it will always make your heart yearn for something else.
It's a very complicated position to be in, I imagine.
It's a really kind of beautiful symbol for, I think, being mixed race and trying to figure out.
Yeah, it's far more complicated than people will realize, especially, you know, it's the identity crisis, you know what I mean? But then also what I think is so interesting too about the story is having the Bosoms on one side and then having the peasants on the other side. And then the idea of like colorism within the community is also something that I guess appreciated is a weird way to explain it, but it's just not something that gets brought up in, you know, in stories.
Like the degrees of blackness.
Yeah, exactly. And just to show, to depict like, yeah, we have issues within our own community as well. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like we're all people. And because of the European influence, because of the internal conflict of like, am I one thing? Am I another thing? Am I white or am I black? And does that make me better if I have like whiteness
in me? A little
bit
more.
Yeah, does that make me better than someone who doesn't have that?
Or on the other side, less black, less able to connect with your
roots or your culture. And so it goes back and forth, and it's a really like the identity crisis within like the black community. I feel like, and you know, I'm not speaking for the entire black community.
Sure, no, this is your experience.
Yeah, but for me personally, it is something that is kind of, it's so complex. And to see that in a show, that was also something that I didn't realize that I had connected to so much until later on. Like, not even until, maybe even after doing the show in college, because we had to talk about it a lot. And to, again, just talk about, like, colorism and how we're depicting that. And then also who should be cast as the peasant and who should be cast on the Bosom side. Like, some people will look at me and think that I'm quote-unquote light-skinned, and then others will be like, nah. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so it just depends on who I'm around or, like, what the spectrum is. And so in the context of the show, I don't think I was a Bosom. But, like, when I'm around white people in musical theater, I feel black. I feel like, you know what I mean? I feel like I'm looked at as a black person. And when I'm around black people, not so much now, but definitely when I was like kind of just sort of finding myself in high school and in college, like seeing where I fit in, when I was around black people in the industry, I would kind of feel other. I definitely wouldn't feel by any means white, but I would feel like something, but just other, which is kind of scarier because you're like, what am I then? Or what am I viewed? Yeah, what am I viewed as? But then I just kind of was like, I am me. And I identify with being a Black woman. That is just, that is who I am. And I'm, you know, I'm different. I'm nerdy and I, you know, sing differently than people expect me to. And sometimes speak differently than people expect me to. Sometimes I speak the way people expect me to. It just really depends on, you know, the circumstances and how I'm feeling. And it's never anything put on. And it's not something I'm conscious of. It's just like the various levels of me being who I am. And this show is about bridging that gap, I feel like. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
And how do we do it?
How do we do it? And they don't accomplish it in the show, which I think is also something important, that it's something that society is going to be figuring out for a very long time. And I like that the show doesn't put a nice little bow on it. But somewhere down the road, someone's going to hear her story and be better for it and is going to make the right decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like so much.
It is. It's so much. It is.
It's so much.
But somebody's got to be first.
Mm-hmm.
So Daniel is a Bosome.
Mm-hmm.
He's from that side of the island. Hence why the villagers aren't real happy about Timoon, you know, taking care of this Bosome. It's like, no, they will probably kill you because they're probably looking for him. You've got him in your house. Are you kidding me? This is just a crazy idea.
Mm.
Kind of leading the charge on that is her mom. What's mom's name again?
Mama Yearly.
Mama Yearly. And she's constantly trying to talk her out of, you know, constantly trying to talk her out of doing what she's doing. And Timoon is doubling down hard, and she keeps asking for herbs, and she keeps asking for herbs, uh-huh. more herbs.
And telling her mama to shush, which is bold.
Mama, you got to be quiet. Get me some cilantro and keep quiet. But I love how Prey gives way to this kind of tribal.
Yes. It's so visceral. It's just very in the moment. You know, when you are overcome with the spirit, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know, they are trying to call upon this higher power and, you know,
in this really crazy situation that none of them have faced before, because
exactly,
Timoon was brave enough to do something so different.
Mm-hmm, to shake things up.
Yeah.
And so there's fear and there's desperation.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember doing this number and oh my gosh, I feel like we all kind of looked forward to it every night when we did it in college. And even just like rehearsing it, it was just like listening to it is one thing, because I remember listening to it on the soundtrack and just being moved, and then getting to like actually physicalize
it. Embody it, yeah.
Wow. Wow. It's cathartic. You know, you release so much, and seeing it live too. I love the way they did in the revival. And
yeah, I think that is one of the things that I have taken away most from Black culture, is the ability to connect spiritual and physical in our bodies.
Mm.
Growing up in my church, if you were reverent, if you felt the spirit, then you were very still and quiet.
Mm.
And that's not to say that that's wrong, because I think that there's absolutely a time and place for that. But there is also something to be said for spiritually working something out.
Mm-hmm.
That requires a lot of wrestling and turmoil, and then physicalizing that,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's why people do kickboxing.
Uh-huh.
You know?
To physicalize something, you do get to like express that energy in a way that, you know, stillness just kind of doesn't do. I also wasn't raised with that. And so mm-hmm. for me, I was raised Catholic. And so it's very reserved and
organized.
Quiet, organized, but somehow still being able to connect to it. Like whenever I see that, and when I do listen to gospel music, I just feel it inwardly. But that comes from, you know, my love of music in general,
right.
I think.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because even you were saying you didn't grow up with that, but mm-hmm. you see it and you can kind of feel how. Yeah.
It's undeniable mm-hmm. to see it within the context of a story. And you're like, oh, I get it. I get it.
Yep.
It's not my experience, but I get it.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. In the process of everyone trying to figure out what to do, Timoon's dad goes to the other side of the island, which is quite a jaunt.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, bangs on the big old mansion.
The gates. Yeah, the gates of the Bosome Manor.
And says, hey, we have your son, and they won't listen to him. until they finally do realize that he knows where
Daniel is.
Meanwhile, Ti-moon has fallen in love with Daniel by showing that love and nurturing.
Even when she first discovered him there, he opened his eyes and she saw that, you know, eyes from another world, that kind of thing. There was fascination. And then, yeah, taking him into her care, that sort of attachment, a feeling that she'd never felt before.
And it's safe to say that Daniel is feeling things as well.
Yes. I have thoughts about Daniel.
Me too. Me too. Because, I mean, spoiler alert, he has no intention of marrying Ti-moon.
No. And I think what always got me about Daniel was that there was something condescending and patronizing, you know, and that's his truth. That's the bubble he's lived in. Mm-hmm. But then he sees one who's so pretty and she's so sweet. And yes, she did save his life. And so he's intrigued now.
I don't doubt that he has a fondness for her and that in many ways his heart has been softened. But
it doesn't go further than that. And even like a fondness, you know what I mean? Just the idea of, oh yeah, I'm fond of that person when the other person is like madly in love and would give her life for him. The idea of that just, oh, it always kind of irked me. Even when he sings his song about her.
Which is a beautiful song.
Beautiful
song. But when
song.
You look at those lyrics, I mean, Lynn Ahrens did a beautiful job because it sounds so romantic.
Yes.
And then when you look at the words, you're like, wait a second, that's kind of messed up.
Kinda. And that's the thing, too, because I was sucked right in. I was like, oh, this is pretty, and he's pretty, and he's singing a pretty song about how pretty she is and how great she is. And, you know what I mean? I was just, I was dragged right along. And then, yeah, looking at the lyrics, you're just like...
Some girls you love, some you teach.
Mm-hmm. Some girls you marry, some you keep. Isn't that also a lyric? Like, what?
Excuse me?
Okay.
That being said, even though these feelings are starting and obviously continue throughout the show, he's not doing well physically, and it looks like he might pass away.
Mm-hmm.
Cue Papa Gay to enter and say, all right, you know, this is the god of death. It's time for me to take this boy. And she says, take me instead, which blows Papa Gay's mind in some way, you know. And he says, okay, fine. We'll do a little trade.
I agree. I like the fact that it comes to Papa Gay as a great shock that someone would be willing to do that. But that's also Urzuli's point.
Is that give her the chance. Mm-hmm. She will show you that love is more powerful than anything.
And Papa Gay's like, yes, she will, but will he?
Mm.
And that's the thing. Just because, you know, she has all this love, you know, growing inside of her and that's fueling her choices in her life, that doesn't mean that the person that she has chosen to give all of this love to will be able to reciprocate. And so that's the kicker, and that's a life lesson.
Yeah.
That's another life lesson, and that's
takes
that one.
Two people to make choices.
Mm-hmm. And also, just since we're on this number, the way that they staged this in the revival was unreal.
Tell me about it.
It's so great. The first time I watched it, I mean, it's such an intimate space already.
Right.
So you think there's only so much that they can do as far as, you know, stage magic. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a great moment where, you know, Daniel is laying on this boat, And then at some point, Daniel is removed. Like Ti-moon puts a blanket over him. And at some point, she goes back to Daniel after prey. And then Papa Gay
was under the blanket?
Under the blanket. And you're like, when did this happen? But, you know, there's so much going on.
Right.
Before that number. And so...
I love that theater magic, man.
Crazy.
Nothing
and
like it.
I was sitting pretty close. We had good seats. I mean, no seat in that house
is a bad
was
seat.
A bad seat, to be honest, which was a great surprise. But still, just a couple rows back, and I literally was with my mom and my best friend, and I was like, how did that happen? Where? Because you just really feel like there can't be a trap door because the boat gets lifted and moved and there's sand underneath. So there's no way. It's like, how did it happen? And I was like, I'm going to just have to let it go. But then I saw it a second time.
Okay.
And so a couple months later, I saw it again. And I knew. I was like, okay, it's coming up. And so I didn't take my eyes off Daniel. And it happened. It was like this really smooth, you know, the focus is on the opposite end of the stage, and people, you know, there's stuff happening and there's lights flashing and things like that, and they just switch. It was so quick, and I don't even know how did he disappear? I really don't know where he went, but I cannot deal.
Yes.
Because even seeing it happen, it was still impressive.
It was still impressive. See, and that's true magic.
Yeah.
Miracles aren't just impressive because you can't explain them.
Right.
Even when you see the explanation and you still love it, that's a miracle.
Mm-hmm. Truly. I was in there like, wow, mind blown.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So deal is made.
Yes.
And Timun's dad brings back the people, right?
Mm.
To take Daniel back home. Timun feels like she needs to go after them.
Mm-hmm. This is heartbreaking.
That her work is not done yet.
Mm-hmm.
And her parents sing this beautiful song called Timun that is
so
that's basically every parent's journey of letting go of their children. It's a beautiful song, and they give their blessing, as hard as it is. They give their blessing to her to go.
Mm-hmm.
So she starts walking across and feeling all alone, but the goddess of earth, Asaka, has your back. And
what a great number.
Isn't this such a great song?
Now, this one is another one.
Showstopper.
I mean, you can't help but showstopper. I mean, Alex Newell got a standing ovation mid-show. Yes.
That's awesome.
Yes. I remember the first time
I do love that the revival played with some gender-bending things because Asaka has always been a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get Alex Newell who can sing anything.
Through the rafters. I mean, just like...
In the original key. So,
but having so much fun, making so many new vocal choices and...
Literally stopped the show.
Yeah. I mean, totally. And it was just, and also my mom is a pretty reserved audience member for the most part. So whenever she does like dance or like jump to her feet or like hoot and holler or whatever, I know the show was good.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And this was one of those ones because I never know what to take her to when we go to New York together, you know. And so the second time we went, she was like, oh, I can't wait to see it again. And we were just jamming. It was so good because it's just. Oh, it's one of those songs.
I got to do a shout out also to Lilias White.
Oh, my goodness.
Because for those who may not know who this Kwan is, Lilias White is one of the muses from Hercules.
Yes,
she's
is
like
indeed.
The lead muse. And she took over in Once on This Island pretty early on in the Broadway run.
Oh, okay.
And Her Mama Will Provide.
Was it Everything?
Is thrilling.
Oh, man.
I think, is it her on the Tony Awards? I'm not sure. You got
to
look it up.
I have to. I actually met the woman who originated it, who's on the soundtrack.
Is it Keisha Lewis Evans?
Keisha Lewis Evans. Miss Keisha Lewis Evans. It was a pleasure meeting her. Yeah, we totally fangirled. I remember we were watching the show. I wish I could remember what show it was. But my friend and I, we were like, why does her voice sound familiar? And then we looked at, because we were in the nosebleeds. We couldn't really see. So we were like, why does her voice sound familiar? And we were flipping through, and we were like, oh, my God.
We've been listening to her for months.
Yeah.
After Mama Will Provide is Some Say, which is a really sweet way of saying, we don't exactly know how she got to the other side of the island, but she did. And maybe it could be this way, and maybe it could be this. Like,
the
game of telephone that folklore and oral storytelling become. You know, it's like, oh, I heard that it was this. And it's part of our storytelling tradition, I think, as humans. From there, she makes her way, and they don't let her in, but she agrees to be a servant. And so that gets her in the gate, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now she's a servant for the Bosoms, for the very fancy family. And she sees Daniel, and Daniel's like, Timon, what are you doing here? Oh, my gosh. You look so great. I love your skin. And and they connect. They have, like, a moment of connection, right?
Mm-hmm. Moment of connection.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, what was it in the revival?
There was nothing, like, too literal.
Yeah.
But it was, like, it's strongly alluded to. You know, they were in bed together, and they spent the night together in that bed. And she, you know, was dressing his wounds and taking care of him and stuff. And, you know, he found her beautiful. And then Urzuli's song, Human Heart.
Right. So the goddess of love
mm-hmm.
sings this beautiful song.
And I also think, too, just Daniel being who he is and coming from the world that he comes from and, you know, seeing a beautiful woman. You know, I'm inclined to think that he, and not to say that he didn't care for her on some, you know, basic level. He had his fondness, you know. But I say that with the biggest
eyes
eye roll.
Rolling in the back of your head.
because that's just, you know. But to him, it was something, it was new. And so maybe they did experience that together.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, Timun's affection grows significantly after that. And she is.
There's an attachment.
Yeah. So.
Yeah,
I
mean, you're absolutely right.
I think they share a kiss.
And it would be nice to have
in the staging
for her to have one moment of that before she dies.
Yeah, thinking that, like, this is, like,
there's some sort of culmination of all of the love that she's been giving. Let's skip now to the ball. So there's this big party that's being thrown. Enter Andrea.
Now, she's definitely a condescending one. She's never like, you need to get this girl out of here, or, oh, Timon, you look some type of way, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? She's never just, like, overtly nasty.
Right.
But that's why it's worse. You know what I mean? Because it's underneath all of this, like, smiles, and she's delicate, and she's dainty, and
very polite.
Very, very polite, poised, polished. Mm-hmm. And in those ways, opposite of Timon. And and there's, like, a rigidity about her. Whereas, like, Timon is just loose and fluid, and she would be someone, like, of the earth, someone who is just, like, grounded and real.
Yeah. The feeling that I get is that she's more upset with Andrea, is more upset with Daniel than Timon. She's like, there are things that haven't been explained, so I'm going to. You know? And boo on him for leading you on like that. But we've been engaged since... Well, she makes Daniel say, but we've been betrothed since we were young. This was always going to happen.
And it's not going to change, so.
But before that, he invites Timon to dance.
This was done so beautifully. So in the revival, you know, there's the sand covering the entire stage now. But for the Bosome Manor, what they did is they removed a big chunk of the sand in the center. And then they could, like, lift it up reveal a sort of, like, dance floor. And yeah, it was a really cool transition, and the other servants in this Bosome Manor are played by the same actors who played Tonton, Julian, and Mama Yurley. So we know that these are people from the village. And when Timon starts dancing, you see the other servants sort of light up because they're like, oh, we know what that is. And I remember we used to dance like that. And I remember when we used to be, like, free in the village and we got to, you know, we got to express ourselves in that way. So Timon starts dancing and everyone's captivated. The Bosomes and the servants alike are all captivated. And then the servants join her in her dance. And it filled my heart with so much joy, even just thinking of it now. It was really special. Because they were breaking it down. Because it was spiritual and it was tribal, but it was also just fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you could just tell, like, their spirits were lifted by being able to express themselves in that way that was so, like, a part of their culture, but that was stripped from them when they had to work in this new place.
What's so heartbreaking is that she's so vulnerable and shows so much of herself, not only through her love and deeds in helping Daniel return to health, but by this dance in front of everybody who very well could have judged her for, and probably at the beginning were judging her.
Especially when she was first invited to dance, they were probably like, who is this?
Yeah.
And she was having a hard time walking in the shoes, like in the heels.
Oh, right.
And so
that's such a cute moment.
It is. And then when she takes them off and then she just expresses herself, she just dances.
So to go from that kind of allowing yourself to be seen to then the crushing news of knowing that he's been betrothed all this time is crushing. I mean,
for Andrea to tell her, you danced so well. Dance at mine and Daniel's wedding.
Yeah, that one hurts.
That one really hurts because she's on this high. Timon is on this high and, you know, she feels so proud that she's shown that the peasants can be beautiful and elegant and can, you know, be something to be appreciated.
Enter Papagay again. Now, what blanket was he hiding under? I'm just kidding. No, so Papagay comes in and basically says, all right, well, it didn't work. He doesn't love you. So it's time to die. And she says, please don't. I don't want to die. And he says, great. Well, here's a little proposition for you. He or she, because in the revival it was played by a woman.
So well, too.
Papagay says, all right, you can live, but you got to kill him. I mean, he was going to die anyway, and now he's betrayed you in the most, you know, horrible fashion. So give me his life. Go ahead and kill him, and we'll call it even. It's an interesting proposition for her, especially in this time when the hurt is so raw.
Right, right.
She has a real wrestling of her soul and spirit, but ultimately decides she can't, that she will not.
She's not that kind of person.
She's not that type of person. She's Timon. She's Timon. which once again is a huge surprise to Papa Gay. Ersuli knew it all the time, of course. Mm-hmm. So then he backs off and she gets kicked out of the house and refuses to go back to the village. Instead, she's going to stay at the gate because at least when they marry, when Daniel and Andrea marry, they have a tradition of coming to the gate and throwing coins. Mm-hmm. So if she stays at the gate, then at least he'll be forced to see her. Mm. So she sits there and they get married. They come to the gate and what happens?
He gives her a coin.
And that's all he can give her.
That's it.
This and like this is a fairy tale? Are you kidding me?
I mean, seriously, that's
I mean that is the original ending of Little Mermaid.
Too. I know, and I had to come to terms with that one too, turning into sea foam and
see,
just.
Right? Anyway, so Timon's crushed. She stays out there at the gate, mm-hmm. and dies of a broken heart.
Yep.
And the gods, knowing how brave that she's been in her life, are very kind to her. Mm-hmm. The song says the Asaka holds her close to her breast. They each have their moment
to accept her. Uh huh.
And in honor of her love, they plant a tree, and the tree grows, and busts open that stupid gate at the mansion. So much so that the gate never closes again. And children of all backgrounds, mm-hmm. colors, mm-hmm. play in its branches. Until one day, a bosom boy sees a young peasant girl and they are able to connect, mm-hmm. and fall in love. Mm-hmm. And that's
why we tell a story.
And then it sets us into this glorious finale of these moments. This progression is why we continue to tell these stories. Uh-huh. And it's literally called Why We Tell the Story. Oh, mm-hmm. It's a good ending.
It's a
sad ending with an amazing song that makes you feel okay about that sad ending.
Yeah, that's the thing. The song is so vibrant and uplifting and does feel like a celebration. And that's how a lot of cultures will view death, too. It's like, you mm-hmm. know, instead of mourning the life lost, they celebrate the life that person had.
The story lives on, the tree mm-hmm. lives on, and the echoes, the ripples. Mm-hmm. Can't be taken back.
Right.
It's already set into motion. It's already on its way. Mm-hmm. And the story ends with the little girl who was crying from the storm.
She starts telling the story.
She starts telling the story all over again.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that whole full circle is just
special. It's special. You're absolutely right. I think it's one of the reasons why I respect Aarons and Flaherty so much. Mm. Is because they are such courageous storytellers. And they never apologize for writing a musical. Mm-hmm. They're never doing, hey, look at us. We're doing this silly art form. It's earnest and mm-hmm. Profound and entertaining.
Yes.
And I love it. I'm so grateful for their additions to musical theater.
Mm-hmm. Likewise.
And this one will continue to live on. I think that
I wish it had a longer life on Broadway.
Okay. So let's talk about that, shall we? I guess the revival, too. It closed pretty early, didn't
it? Yeah. And it was so good. And now the tour is happening, but they can't do it in the round because there's just limitations with tours like that. And I saw a picture of what they're doing and of how they've adapted for mm-hmm. the tour. And it looks
good. I'm sure it'll be great.
But there was just something about that experience that really set it apart from any other Broadway experience I think anyone will ever have.
Wow.
You just felt so a part of the world. Experiences like that are unparalleled, I think.
And that you can't really have in film. I love film, but there will always be a place for theater if we keep embracing the theatricality and mm-hmm. create an experience that you can only have in it. Mm-hmm. That's really cool. I'm jealous you got to experience it twice.
Man.
So cool. Okay, so the original production ran from 1990 to 1991, and it was nominated for a bunch of Tony Awards, including Best Musical. Mm-hmm. Here were the other nominees that year. Miss Saigon.
Oh, shoot.
Big Show.
Dang.
The Secret Garden.
Okay.
Another big, gorgeous show. Mm-hmm. And the Will Rogers Follies.
Uh-huh.
Another huge show.
Yeah.
And Will Rogers Follies was the one that won, surprisingly uh-huh. enough. I mean, great show, but of Miss Saigon, Once on This Island, Secret Garden, Will Rogers Follies, I think Will Rogers Follies is probably the least known of those four, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Tommy Toon wins for director, even though Graciela Daniel was nominated. Secret Garden wins for Best Book. which actually I love that story. I think Secret Garden is one of those stories like Peter Pan that's pretty perfect.
Timeless.
Yeah. And then score goes to Cy Coleman for Will Rogers Follies. Once on this Island was just a lovely little show that really had a hard time, I think, not getting swallowed up by all of these these big ones. LaShawn's was nominated for Best Featured Actress, which is interesting.
Oh, who did they consider to be the lead of that show?
I don't think they had any leads. I think everyone was considered ensemble. But Daisy Egan became the youngest actress to win a Tony Award for playing Mary in Secret Garden that year.
And it didn't have – it wasn't going up against much for Best Revival, was it?
It won Best Revival.
I know it won, but who – was there like stiff competition, I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying. Revival of a musical that year was Once on This Island, Carousel, My Fair Lady.
Oh, I saw My Fair Lady.
So those were three really solid choices, but I'm really glad they went with Once on This Island.
Specifically, I think that one was the most innovative. That was the most – they really did something new and special with that revival that, I mean, people – you can't get another experience like that one.
Right. Well, like you said, even if you take it on tour, it will never be the same as it was.
Yeah, it really will never. And the story is always beautiful and, you know, they'll get – wonderful performers, but the experience itself will never be that. And so that's why that was so special. And I'm glad that they got recognized for that, because My Fair Lady was very well done well. And it looked stunning.
Well, and no offense, but Carousel and My Fair Lady will be fine.
That's the thing, too. Those have had lives and those will continue to have lives.
Let's give some love to our Islanders.
And those are considered classics. Those are considered like traditional musical theater classics.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I saw a production of Once on This Island. The first time I actually saw it on stage was here in L.A. at Reprise.
Oh, cool.
And I want to say, like, Billy Porter directed it.
That's amazing.
And Ledisi, do you know who Ledisi is?
Mm-mm.
She's like a neo-soul.
Oh, Ledisi.
Oh, is that how you say it? Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh, how embarrassing. Ledisi.
No, totally fine. Ledisi, I do. I'm very familiar with her work.
Like that voice, right?
Yes.
She played Asaka.
Oh, that was probably stunning.
And they like made it kind of Afro-Caribbean.
That was probably stunning.
Yeah.
Totally see her.
It was really enjoyable. It was an enjoyable evening at the theater.
I bet.
All right. Once on This Island rocks.
Yes, it does.
There are three different cast albums that you can listen to on Spotify. There's
listen
like
to them all.
The original Broadway, the London, and the revival. All of them have amazing things. So thank you, Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody who shares their stories.
Because
that's how it happens, and that's why we do this.
Yes.
I have to remind myself sometimes. That's why we do this, is because these stories, and it's one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast, is because I believe there is something profound about these stories that when we look in them, make us a little bit better. And might show the gods that we're ready for something new.
And we as performers, as actors, and just artists in general, we are storytellers. We tell our own stories and we try to connect to other people's stories through our art. So many layers, so much, you know, complex emotion within the music and within the book. It's special to be a part of, and it's special to sit back and actually get to talk about those things and to appreciate them in this way. So thank you so much for letting me be here and be a part of this discussion.
Bryce, thank you. How can we follow what you're up to?
So I'm on Instagram, Bryce_Charles. I try to keep up with the social media game, but it's a tricky game.
If nothing else, go on her Instagram and see how drop dead gorgeous you looked at the Ovation Awards.
Thank you so much.
Talk about showstopper.
It's like too kind.
You give Alex Newell a standing ovation. We also give you a standing ovation for that ensemble.
Stop it. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Oh my gosh.
You know what, you guys? Remember that you can always request a specific show for us to cover here on A Musical Theater Podcast by emailing me at amusicalpodcast@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at amusicalpodcast for more great content. Don't forget to show me those pictures of your pets with names from musical theater.
Yes.
And tell your story.
Woo! Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.